What about you? What if you are the person for this hour, the person God has arranged for to be in this position at this time? What if you are receiving the call of God to take this action and you turn away?
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to say thanks for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church podcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This podcast can be found on iTunes by searching for Terry Bailey Ministries in the iTunes store, where you can also subscribe to the podcast and get the weekly message sent automatically to you by clicking the subscribe button. Right now, let's get back to Pastor Terry as he preaches this week's insightful message.
Good morning. Russell read for you the verse that is about the center physically, but also kind of the center theologically of the book of Esther. And Russell asked me if when he saw the text for this week, if this was going to be a sermon about partying, letting me know that Russell has seen the Tommy and John Thomas play Star Queen. How many of you have seen Star Queen? Yeah. Well, this won't be that. But hopefully it'll be a blessing to us anyway. For those who may not know the story of Esther so well, let me just summarize it briefly. In the late period of the second captivity, the Jews had been taken by Babylon, but then Babylon had been conquered by the Medes, and the Medes had been conquered by the Persians, and we're in that period now. In that period, Esther was a Jewish girl living in the capital of the Persian Empire. And the king, one Ahasuerus, came to a parting of the ways with his queen, one Vashti, and sent her packing. He needed a new queen, and he held a beauty pageant, auditions, talent show, I don't know what all, but he selected one from among the young ladies of the kingdom to be his new queen, and that was Esther. And her uncle, Mordecai, a Jewish man who was fairly high up in the administration of King Ahasuerus, said to her, I tell you what, just keep to yourself for the moment the fact that you are Jewish. Let that kind of glide under the radar. Be the queen, but no need to mention your ethnicity or your religion. Now, there's another player in the story, a man named Haman, who, for reasons I won't go into, develops a lot of hostilities toward the Jews. And because Haman is also close to the king, he is able to move things through the legislature, so to speak, and he gets a law passed which allows Persian citizens of the empire on a given day to attack, to take from Jewish citizens of the empire anything that they want, and to kill them if need be in order to take the things that they want. And for anyone who says, what an unlikely story, such a thing could never happen, just remember the Second World War. Of course, it could happen. And this law is in place, and the day is approaching when Persian citizens will be able to attack and take from and murder Jewish citizens in the empire. And Esther is the unknown Jewish queen who has a position of power and privilege. Now, I should also note before I continue with this, that as I said, we are late in the second captivity. The Jews who were dismissed by King Cyrus, given permission and aid to go back to Israel and rebuild the kingdom there, have already gone. And they were a minority of the Jewish people, but they're already gone. The 70 years prophesied by Isaiah has passed, and these people are now in residence in Palestine. The majority of the Jews stayed in Persia, and they stayed because as the years had passed, the conditions of the captivity grew less harsh. The Babylonians had been fierce and cruel and held most of them in low forms of bondage, though a few, like Daniel, rose to positions of power. But that harsh, harsh period has passed, and among the Persians, they are more like an ethnic minority. They don't have maybe all the rights of Persian citizens, but they live in relative peace, and they are able to prosper, and it is the only life that many of them have ever known. The majority of the Jewish people stayed in Persia, but a small group with pioneer spirit had returned to Israel with the permission and the aid of the former King Cyrus to rebuild the kingdom there in the land of promise. And in Israel, they are surrounded by enemies, and Israel is still considered a part of the Persian Empire. The Samaritans didn't want them there. Other peoples didn't want them there. Nobody wants to share the land. Nobody wants the Jews to establish themselves as an independent state. Does this sound vaguely familiar? Same then as now. And they are kept, these hostile parties, from attacking the Jews only by the royal decrees of Cyrus, the former king, which are still in place, saying that you cannot attack these people. They are here by my permission. They have my support. They have my aid. People disagreed with them, but the royal decree prevented them from attacking in an outright manner most of the time. What happens when this new decree by King Ahasuerus, instigated by Haman, goes into effect empire-wide, is that those people in Israel who are hostile to the Jews, who are there to rebuild the kingdom in the promised land, will be free to carry out all the violence and theft that they could wish. So Esther is in a position not just to help the people that she knows of her own ethnicity there in the Persian capital, but to help the people way back in Israel who are carrying forth the covenant, but who will be in danger when this decree goes into place. And the only reason that she has for not wishing to use her position to aid them is that she is afraid. There was a change in the microphone. Can everybody still hear me? Okay, just making sure. Okay, great. I just heard a change, making sure. She's afraid. She's the queen, which has a certain amount of influence and power. But she's not the king, and she knows what happened to the former queen when that woman had the nerve to not cooperate fully with all of Ahasuerus's wishes. She got sent packing, and worse things can happen. She says, if I go into the king uncalled for, and he has not called for me in quite some time, I am subject to the death penalty. If he feels like imposing it, he can just have me killed. You want me to go to the king and intercede for our people, but it is dangerous for me to do so. Even though I'm the queen, I can't just, on my own initiative, approach the king and interfere with his will, affairs, and desires. I understand this situation completely because that's exactly how it is in my home. I'm waiting. Ha ha! Yes! I don't dare interrupt Michael. I tell you, the joke thing when you're all in your cars, it's harder. It's much harder. This is Esther's position. She could do something to save the people. But on the other hand, if she just stays quiet, whatever happens to them, and especially those far away people in a land where she has never been, taking part in the building of a covenant in which she has never been invested, whatever happens to them, she will be safe there in the palace. It requires only that she keep her mouth closed. And Mordecai says to his niece, "Has it not occurred to you that perhaps you came into the kingdom, into this place, at this time, this position, with these benefits, right now, for the express reason that you could be God's instrument in bringing deliverance to his people?" Now, I tell you, God is not limited. You are not his only option, Mordecai says. If you step back, God will bring deliverance for the Jews from some other quarter, but that is not the only thing in question. What about you? What if you are the person for this hour, the person God has arranged for to be in this position at this time? What if you are receiving the call of God to take this action and you turn away? God can still save his people, but what about you and your place with God? You know, people frequently wonder about callings. And I've had several conversations with people. How do I know if I'm being called by God? And I have 3 points that I usually discuss with them, and I'll only really go into one of those today. The others I'll mention in passing without particularly telling you that I'm doing so. But I'll talk about this one. When people ask me about calling, I always end up here. You're asking me because you are uncertain that you want to do this thing. So let's evaluate the reason for which you don't want to do it and see where that leaves us. The only reason that Esther didn't want to do this thing that she was in a position to do was that she was afraid of being hurt or killed personally. Now, I mentioned that the earlier portion of the captivity under the Babylonians had been a good deal more harsh. You know a story from that time concerning Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they were asked to bow and worship at the king's statue, and they said no. And he said, if you won't do it, into the furnace you go. And they said, you can throw us into the furnace. That is in your power as king. It's your prerogative to do so, but we will still not bow down to your statue, and maybe God will deliver us from the fire of the furnace, or maybe he won't, and maybe we will burn in there. But if we burn, we burn to honor God, and we will never bow down to your statue. And into the furnace they went, and you know the story. Their bonds were burned, but their clothes and their hair were not even singed. There was a fourth man in the fire who kept them safe, and they came out not even smelling of smoke. And God reached into the administration of the Babylonian king, Nebuchadnezzar. The question is, do you think that God is less able to protect Esther than he was able to protect Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Or do you suppose that if Esther does suffer personal harm, that it is less possible in her life for even the harm she suffers to glorify God than it was possible for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who specifically stated that God was under no obligation to save them from the fire, but even in death, they would obey and honor him. God has not changed. His abilities have not changed. His reach has not been shortened. Esther's only motivation for resisting the call is fear, and God is well able to protect her and lead her through whatever fire she may enter. Now, I want to interject here that the whole time with which Esther is associated is like this. It is not just Esther. There were always people raised up to meet the need. When the Jews had been released by Cyrus to go home, they needed someone who had the gift of being a leader of men to lead them, to organize them, to get them across the borders, to help them through the legalities, to motivate them in the face of hardship. They needed someone to tell them, I know you want to address military concerns first when we get there, but God is bringing us home, and first we need to build a temple. They needed a leader of men. And there was such a leader. His name was Jerubbabel, and he was in the right place at the right time to step up, and he did. And they received that which they needed to make the original journey and resettle in the land promised to their forefather Abraham. Now, Jerubbabel could easily have pled, but it's too hard. And it was hard. It was a hard job. And he was under no human legal pressure to undertake such a difficult task. But he did. And with God's help, he succeeded, providing the leadership that they so needed. Once Jerubbabel had them resettled and the temple reconstructed, they knew in advance that this would be the case, but now it is a pressing need. We need someone who understands the religious law passed down to our forefathers so that we can really practice the religion as we ought. And they knew before they left Persia that people had not kept up their religious training the way that they should have, knowing they would be there only 70 years. And yet there were not enough priests. There were not enough registered Levites. There were not enough Levitical singers. There were not enough of anyone trained and qualified to lead their religious life. And they have a temple built, but what do you do in there? There was one man who had kept up his training in full and was qualified to be called a religious scribe. His name was Ezra. And perceiving the need of the people to take this second step in the restoration of the covenant, Ezra went. And Ezra could easily have pleaded, but they will hate me. They always hate the people who have to call them to religious change and fulfillment of the vows that God has placed upon them. They're going to dislike me. Well, they disliked Moses, didn't they? Threatened to kill him on several occasions. And in the earlier Babylonian captivity, just before Ezra's time, the elders of Israel had been decidedly unfond of the prophet Ezekiel, and yet God led these men through. Ezra could have raised that cry, "They will not like me." But he went. And he was perhaps the only man of his time qualified to do this job that needed done. And he did it. And the religious ritual life of the covenant was restored. When Jerubbabel and Ezra had done their jobs, there was a new need for someone to help the Israelites form themselves into a independent, self-governing political community. It began with the need for a wall to define their territory in Jerusalem, which task they thought was impossible and unable to move forward. The whole project was beginning to flounder, and word of the floundering reached the court in Persia, and another Jewish man who was high up in the administration heard of it and was grieved. His name was Nehemiah, and he knew that he had the gifting, the administrative ability to get them through this time. And he went, and they made it. But he could have pled, "You know, I got a pretty good gig here. I'm the king's cupbearer. I'm well paid. I'm well thought of. It's a cushy, comfy life that I have, and there's no real call for me to leave it for the hard scrabble pioneer endeavor of getting things back to where they ought to be in destroyed Jerusalem." He could have pled that. But he went. Now, all that said, I just want you to understand, if you are in a position and you have the gifting to advance the kingdom of God, but your only objections are along these lines: "I'm scared. It's too hard. They won't like me. I don't want to give up the comforts that I know," then let me tell you what your real problem is. You don't trust God, who can protect His own and do the impossible job, and whose favor is to be sought far above the favor of men. And who, if He leads you to give things up, will see to it that you never miss them. For whoever loses houses or lands in such endeavors will be repaid 100 times over in this present world and in the world to come. It's important to evaluate the reasons for which you don't want to answer God's call. Because you may find that in addition to the service that is to be performed for all the other people of God, the really important thing has to do with you learning to walk with Him, learning to trust Him, learning to value Him above all else. And it is important for you to take that step. And what if you are the guy? What if you are the woman who is called, who is here at the right time, gifted in the right way, but you turn away from God's calling? What about you? It's very important for you that you answer. Because who knows but that you came into the kingdom for such a time as this. And what are our times? Well, there's the pandemic, of course. And there's the escalating racial tension, the rioting, the looting, the burning. There's the increasingly extreme political polarization and hatred. There's a declining regard for the truth. There's a growing disaffection for the church. There may be some time that you could point to where the people of God are not needed so badly to step into the gap, but this is not that time. We are needed today. And God has put us here. And God has gifted us. that we may serve in this world and advance his cause. What about us if we decline to go where we are called? What is your calling? Well, you come see me if you have questions. I can't answer that question for you from here. I may not be able to answer it for you at all, but I may be able to help you identify the hand of God pushing you in a certain direction. It can be small things. I have so appreciated all the women who make the masks and all the people who volunteer to hand out the food and everyone who takes this little part. I will say humbly that I feel like in this current time it has been my calling to lead this congregation through these crises. I am trying my best to do so. But you, what about you? Who knows but that you came into the kingdom for just such a time as this? And what about you if you are the one God has prepared for a particular thing and you turn away for no better reason than fear or the desire of comfort or a feeling that it might be too hard, or because you value the opinion of men more than the favor of God? What about you?
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our faithful listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church podcast. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.